B-Pod Studios.
They work.
Arr, matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Never full steam ahead, no matter what. I think one thing we're learning about this virus is much is unpredictable. And I think we and our players together with their union, the Players Association, look at the data on a daily basis. And if there were something to change that was outside of the scope of what we're playing for, certainly we would revisit our plans. I'd also say, we're testing daily. We haven't put a precise number on it, but if we were to see a large number of cases and we were to see spread in our community, that, of course, would be a cause for us to stop as well.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver doing something called a Time 100 talk. Is that like a TED talk?
Check, talk, tie.
So Adam Silver, when asked if they're going to go to Orlando, as the plan is right now to play in the bubble, any chance you don't go because of the surge in cases down there? Adam Silver said, never full steam ahead, no matter what. One thing we are learning about this virus is much is unpredictable. And we and our players together, with their union, look at the data on a daily basis. There was something to change that was outside of the scope of what we are playing for. Certainly, we would revisit our plans. We're testing daily. We haven't put a precise number on it. But if we were to see a large number of cases and see spread in our community, that would, of course, be a cause to stop as well. So Adam Silver saying, yeah, we're going to play. You know, we're pretty confident, his words, about their plan to resume in the bubble in Orlando, but said they look at stuff all the time and it's never full steam ahead. So what's your confidence level, Zoe? NBA, Orlando,
my confidence level is still good. It's still good, and I think they've been pretty damn good about this. You know, they're going to give it a go. And he, out of most of the commissioners, has pretty much handled, you know, his league stuff pretty damn good with this. He's right, though. Like, I don't know. I can't promise you anything, but damn it, we're going to try and play. And if an entire team gets affected, we're probably going to shut it down for a little bit and then give it a go again. And that's learning to live with it. To me, I mean, that's the new norm here, right? We talk about getting to the new norm. The new norm is learning to get back out there, function, make money, do business again, and do what you're supposed to do, and that's go play basketball. Now, I know it's different, and you're not going to see your family for a while, but this is what you have to do and sacrifice for right now.
I guess the difference would be is if they decide to, like, shut it down for a while, like you said, depending on...
What's that mean? Yeah, just shut it down and stay in Disney for another week or two?
Right.
And then give it up a go again? Or do you get out of there?
And how long do you shut it down for? I mean, all this is...
We don't know.
It is not only about, you know, finishing this season, but it's about giving yourself enough time for free agency, giving yourself enough time to have an off season, and then starting next season. At what point do you say shutting it down for a couple of weeks is going to screw us up so much going forward that we really should probably just scrap this thing? And like you said, not keep everybody down here in Disney World and send everybody home, and then have to restart everything all over again. You know, how long do you?
What do? Do you send them back to their cities? When's the first spikes in the cities where you're at? I see. This is tough, man.
And then when you bring them back in, do you go through the whole testing procedure and the quarantining and stuff all over again? That's why it goes back to what we were talking about before, Zoe. What do you do when somebody tests positive? Are you
like
doing?
There's this report out of course, India. We did the monkey story out of India, right? Supposedly, there was this wedding that took place in India on June 15th, and the groom was infected with COVID. Supposedly, 80 people at that wedding. You talk about a massive spike as far as transmission of the disease. 80 people caught it. Like, what if an entire football team catches it? You know? Are you going to be able to keep this? Because the NFL's not going to be in a bubble. The NBA, at least, is trying to do it in a bubble.
It would scare
the hell out of me if it pops and it spreads there and they shut it down. Because that would not bode well for the other sports.
Did you have a monkey connection at the beginning of that? Was it did a monkey like infect everyone at the wedding to start with?
No monkey. Usually the monkey stories come out of India. There's a story that was one of the lead stories, you know, the national stories is there was a wedding that took place in India on June 15th.
So you've only said monkey, no monkeys.
No monkeys. No monkeys. No monkeys got married.
Okay.
Monkeys do what they want. Yeah, anyway.
You know what? Talk about swinging.
Literally, they can swing
literally,
from trees.
Figuratively, every sense of the word.
Coolest thing about the monkey, you could swing by your tail, and then you still have your faculties, your four other extremities, ready to go at any time.
Depends on the monkey.
It could be a macaque. Yeah,
I would think it. Right, I don't know. I'm not as well versed in the monkey species and what they're capable of as you are.
You like macaques, McCone?
Love them.
Those you know which monkeys they are, right?
You don't even have to answer if you don't want to, Tim. You can just...
Those are the ones, they ride the dogs. They're the cute ones. Like, you ever been on a cruise, McCone? You ever go down to Mexico or you go to the islands and they're the ones that come around, they jump on your shoulder, they sit on your head, take a picture. We got pictures of our kids with them on our heads.
Is that the kind of monkey in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yes. And
you're
also
sure?
And also in The Hangover.
You're sure?
I am sure. Yeah. Always good. Guy opens its mouth. And always fiddling with stuff. Yep. I like the one in The Hangover because it smokes a cigarette after
that's a shot. That's a capuchin monkey.
You sure?
Or a capuchin. Yeah.
I got to study my monkeys better.
Well, you sounded so confident.
I know, yeah, Asia and North Africa for the macaque.
Attaboy.
What type of monkey is in The Hangover? A Hangover 2, correct? Zo?
Yes.
Also a capuchin or capuchin. I don't know how you...
No, it might be Hangover 3. It might be Hangover 3. Which one was in Bangkok?
I think that was 2.
Bangkok City. Remember Mike Tyson shows up?
Yeah. Same type of monkey. All right. All right.
That's where Eddie's finger gets bit off, right? Or lost.
I think I never saw 3. I only saw 2 once. I was not a fan.
No, good.
The first one they touched the sun. After that, they should have.
Someone when Stu got the tattoo on his face, the Mike Tyson tattoo.
Well, so we've done this before. Name me a comedy where the sequel is as good or better than the original.
Hangover. That's definitely one.
No,
dude, Alan. They'd start the one with Alan going down the freaking highway with a giraffe and
absolutely
gets decapitated.
Absolutely
not to Hanson.
Not yet. It as good as the original. Come on. The original.
Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
We almost watched the sequel the other night, but I convinced my kids I didn't want to watch it because I never saw the first one and I didn't want to
you
be lost.
You want to spoil it? That's good.
I didn't want to be lost. I'm like, I won't know what's going on.
And I can't follow this.
And they said, you know what? You're right. Fair. We won't make you watch that one. So instead,
what's the Adam Sandler one with David Spade and Chris Rock?
Grown-ups?
Grown-ups too. That was a good one.
Because Shaq dances in the parking
Godfather.
Lot of Grown Ups too. Now, okay, Godfather, not a comedy.
Shaq was so bad in that movie. Okay, comedy.
So Daddy's
Weekend
Home 1, Daddy's
2?
Home 2.
Daddy's Home 2, absolutely, Jim. Daddy's Home 2 was actually better than Daddy's Home.
Daddy's Home 2, is that the one where Mel Gibson comes in?
Oh, yeah.
He's introduced? Okay. I was a little disappointed in Daddy's
Home. Mel
Gibson
was in 2.
I thought that had potential. You know what Will Ferrell movie I watched last night, as a matter of fact? Severely underrated Will Ferrell movie. Stranger Than Fiction. You ever seen that one? Anybody?
I never heard of it.
Stranger. No. Okay. All right.
Does he play a serious role or is
kind
he,
of, but it's still funny. He finds himself, he's living his life, he's an IRS agent, and he hears a narrator narrating his life. Like in his head. And he's like, what the hell is going on? And he goes to see somebody about it, a literary professor, and they find out, they determine who the writer is. And he goes and he meets the woman, and she, sure enough, is writing a book. And for some reason, as she writes, the voice ends up being in his head. Huh. And the twist of it is she only writes tragedies where the character always dies at the end. So what's he going to do? It's a great movie. But in terms of Will Ferrell movies, Daddy's Home had potential, I thought. That's just, you know what it is? It's the last third of any comedy that they feel the need to, like, tie up the story, and it ends up just being so bad. They pulled it off in The Hangover, which is why it's such a good movie. Like the last third or the last 25% of that movie, it's still good. It's still funny.
Yeah.
They managed to do something with the ending without making you feel like, oh, here we go. Here's where they get to the movie where they like, oh, yeah, there's supposed to be a plot and we have to like have everything make sense. And in a lot of comedy.
God. Yeah, here goes my camera again.
What?
Sorry. My camera went nuts again.
Oh.
Here we go. And anything with Chow in it, with The Hangover, it's so free. He's so freaking funny in it. But I'm telling you, you go home, you watch Will Ferrell get hard tonight. You'll laugh your ass off. Him and Kevin Hart, right? McCone, you've seen that movie.
No, that's good. I think Semi-Pro is wildly underrated. I think Semi-Pro is hilarious.
But there's no sequel. Again, we're talking about a comedy sequel that is equal to or surpasses the original.
My bad. I'll try to keep up. I'll try to keep up.
See, now you got Zoe upset. Was it worth it?
Sequel. Two
Rush
movies.
Rush Hour 2.
I mean, I just talked about Stranger Than Fiction, so Turnabout is a fair play.
What about Jaws? Jaws 2 was... Jaws 1 was so good. Like,
not a comedy.
But it's funny. Like when they were drunk. When they were drunk and laughing under the boat.
I'm pretty sure that both Jaws and The Godfather are not comedies. I mean, I don't want to get into like this whole categorization argument, but I think it's safe to say that neither one is you're going to find the comedy section. It's tough. The Austin Powers movies, maybe. It's the same jokes over and over again, but they introduce some new characters. The Naked
Capello texted me, Godfather 2. It's not a comedy, dumbass. Okay. God, pay attention.
Oh, is he chiming in right now? Oh, boy.
Who?
You know who. What does he say?
Who?
Fowler.
Oh, God. Christmas Vacation.
I don't think of Christmas Vacation as a sequel. I think it's part of a franchise.
No, it's just a running. It's like because Christmas Vacation came after European Vacation.
But it wasn't
a sequel. It's a
the kids get just, younger.
It's the movie keeps going, right?
Yeah, it's just it's.
What's the guy's name? Jack. Remember from Karate Kid? And, God, and Audrey was the chubster in love with Jack.
God, I miss Jack.
And she missed Jack's when she saw the hot dog.
Yeah,
the big Costco hot dog.
Yeah, it's a kielbasa. It's tough.
You got to stack up on some meat today, man.
All right, now we have
big meat day for the weekend.
Now we have loaded lines on comedies. Okay, let's do that next.
We'll do that next.
617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Never full steam ahead, no matter what. I think one thing we're learning about this virus is much is unpredictable. And I think we and our players together with their union, the Players Association, look.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Got an itch for sports talk while you work?
So just dropped his phone down his shirt.
You want to know why? He was using it to scratch his back.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Zolak and Bertrand Hardy in for Beatle here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Comedy sequel that's equal to or better than the original. That's tough. It's a tough ask, but we got loaded lines on it. Zoe, you ready?
My neighbor's in on it. Big Rob from across the street. Fletch Lives. Not bad. Maybe not as good as the first one, but it's not bad. And he's right. I love the Fletch movies.
That's a good one. That's definitely a good one. All right, let's go to Jan in New Hampshire. Jan, what do you have?
Oh, first I want to tell you that I love your show. I only have one complaint. I love it so much it keeps me from doing anything productive in the household while you're on.
Me too.
Aside from that, I have to say, what about Meet the Parents?
Excellent one.
Okay.
Nailed it.
So
it might be better than the first one.
So the sequel is Meet the Fockers, where they go to meet Barbara Streisand and Dustin Hoffman.
And that was exactly. That was a great movie.
That's a good one.
Good.
That's a good one.
What's your complaint?
Right.
What's your complaint?
Love you guys.
What is your complaint? What is your complaint?
Your show is so damn good that I don't get any work done.
Yeah, that's what
that's all you have to complain about? That's great.
That's it. Thanks, Jan.
I appreciate that.
That's nice. That's nice. There are more than one person shares Seth's opinion here. Seth in Portland, what do you got?
No, Seth.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Seth.
Great. Zoe, you always got me laughing, so keep it up, man.
Do you know Jim Louth was going to be named Seth if it wasn't Jim?
I heard you say that. Was that yesterday you said that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's great for Jim Louth, I guess.
What do you got?
So Ace Ventura, Pet Detective's great, but When Nature Calls, the sequel, is just absolutely my favorite movie of all time.
Is that the one when he's in the van or in the Jeep and he's bouncing up and down, going over?
Yep, he's bouncing in the Jeep. There's a couple scenes.
I think it's better than the first.
He crawls out of the rhino in that one. What else? It's just the whole white devil thing. It's all great, man. It's comedy gold.
There you go. Excellent. Thank you, Seth.
Good one.
And Jim Louth, almost named Seth.
Hey, what about the, that doesn't count because they're horror movies.
Which one?
Horror, not horror. Horror. Freddy Krueger's.
Oh, The Nightmare on Elm Street.
There are so many good ones.
Those end up being kind of funny, though.
What about I Know What You Did Last Summer? Or like
Scream. Scream were, those were funny, right?
Yeah, they were.
I'm laughing just thinking about them. Tony in the car. What do you think, Tony?
Home Alone.
The second?
Yes!
Home Alone 2 Lost in New York?
It goes my stupid camera again.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
That's a good one.
That's
where he spent the night at the Plaza.
That's the one George Costanza wouldn't watch because he had never seen Home Alone and he was afraid of being lost. And then when he does watch Home Alone, Jerry walks in on him and he was crying and he said, "The old man got to me." It was the old man at the end made him cry. Fitzy needs a ruling on something. Fitzy in Uxbridge. What is it, Fitzy?
Looking for a ruling on Police Academy.
Ooh. Okay. What's that? What is your question specifically?
Well, there's six of them that I know of. They're not all winners, but some of them are on par with the first one.
All right, I would automatically say the Miami Beach one. I think I'm going to count that out of the conversation.
If we're going to go down this road,
yeah,
then you got to interject to put Hot Shots and Hot Shots Part Deux, in there.
Can we make just maybe the ruling on Citizens on Patrol, that Police Academy movie? Do you remember that one?
Oh, that's a beauty.
That is. It's an instant classic, Citizens on Patrol.
What if they made a Con Air 2? That'd be bad.
Well, is Nicolas Cage going to be back in prison for something?
He should. John Malkovich, he should fly the plane.
Well, who's dead at the end of Con Air?
What about Madagascar, Madagascar 2? Can you count Toy Story 2? Are we going into Pixar? I mean, we really want to get nothing.
Oh, sure. Despicable Me. I think the second one is equal to the first
phenomenal,
one.
Phenomenal. Right. Because they're both so strange. The Incredibles.
Excellent. Very good.
Little Mermaid 2 is terrible.
I don't think I saw Little Mermaid 2.
I had two daughters, so I've seen them. I've seen them all.
I have strong opinions on this movie that Steve is going to bring up. Go ahead, Steve.
I actually got two of them now.
Okay.
Because you guys reminded me with the horror movie, Scary Movie.
Yeah.
And American Pie.
Yeah, there you go. American Pies are all good, man.
See, I love American Pie.
I can't.
It's one of my all-time favorite comedies.
I tried watching American Pie again not long ago. So, compared to the one I would say from our generation, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, does it compare?
I would say it's better because Stifler reminds me of me so much.
It's not even. How about this? Let me give
Fast Times at Ridgemont High was good, but I got creeped out by Mike Damone.
Of course you did.
And the other kid. What's the kid's name? Brad? No, Brad was a tall kid.
How about this?
Who was the squirrely kid? He's like, I don't want a girlfriend.
Judge Reinhold?
No, Judge Reinhold was Brad. He worked at the burger place, clown place. The douchey kid.
Damone was the douchey.
Mike Damone
one.
Was a hey man. No, Mike Damone was the ticket guy. Hey man, I get your tickets. I got your earth.
Yeah,
fire.
Yeah.
Hey Jefferson. You know? The kid, the other kid. The girl's brother. What the hell's her name? No, the one he asked out.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
The D-bag worked at the movie theater.
The dorky kid.
Yeah, the dorky kid. That kid ruined the movie. He's like same way that other kid ruined old Back to School for me too. Roddy Dangerfield's kid.
Let me just say this one though. In American Pie again, I tried watching the other day. Wasn't that great? Compare it to Superbad. How do you think it compares to Superbad?
Superbad crushes it.
Crushes it, right?
Crushes it.
It's not even a conversation. When you can have a movie as good as Superbad and then you try and watch American Pie, is it even
McLovin.
Funny?
Is it Woody even good? Seal?
Right. All right. We gotta get ahead of things here because Kurt Warner.
Why?
Because Kurt Warner is joining us exactly like at 12:50. So we gotta make sure we're in front of things. So we've got some time. But we're going to get to headlines just a minute or two early. Let's grab one more here. This is one that Billy Lanny is fully on board with. Phil, your suggestion for a movie comedy as good or better than the original?
Oh, Naked Gun all day, guy. 1, 2, 3.
Naked Gun movies are fantastic, all of them. Just pick one.
They're all the same.
They're all the same, but it gets a little refined, I think, in the sequels, and I think they're even better. So
Ricky Palazzo.
Henry.
He's the freaking umpire. It's great.
It's so good. All right, McCone here with the Hub headlines. We'll continue taking your calls on this. Cam Newton calls on the board as well, too, so we'll take care of all of it here and some return to sports in the age of Corona here calls. All of them coming up here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Consider them part of your benefits package.
This was the dumbest 30 seconds we've ever had on this show.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
So, are you all right with talking about, you know, movie sequels right up until we talk to Kurt Warner? I mean, do you see any conflict there, or should we, you know, steer ourselves back towards sports a little bit?
Well, he had a pretty good sequel.
That's all very good. Very good.
Tied in.
The third one was, I mean, the second one was not so much, but he's that rare case where the original was great, the first sequel, and then that...
Third one?
The third one was real good, right? How often does that happen?
Hangover 3.
Let's see what Glenn in Cumberland thinks. Glenn, go ahead.
Yeah, Clerks 2.
You know what? I didn't see Clerks. Zoe, you probably didn't see Clerks.
I never did see Clerks 1.
The Clerks 1, the kind of lo-fi black and white, you know, Kevin
Smith.
Yeah,
black and white, I don't watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it was supposed to speak to the whole like 90s generation. I never thought it was all that great. I didn't quite get it. I never saw Mighty Ducks either, but Bob has a thought on the sequel. What is it, Bob?
I got to say, you know, like the Shrek series is, you know, really, really good, but I'm going to say Mighty Ducks 2 is way better than the first one.
Shrek 2, good call.
Are you a Mighty Ducks guy, Zoe?
Never saw the first one.
Me neither.
The Disney hockey movie.
I know.
Didn't do it for me.
Is there a sports story? A true
story? Who was the lead actor in Mighty Ducks 1? I don't think I liked the lead actor.
Emilio Estevez.
Yeah. Thank you. That was coach. I'm good.
And after Tanguay and DJ did their rendition of it for their cinematic snippet.
Those things lasted long, huh?
Well, they're a lot of work, you know.
Oh, are they?
You weren't inspired to go watch Mighty Ducks after watching Gary and DJ act out a scene from it?
Those movies, they made me not want to go watch those movies.
I did see Ford versus Ferrari. I did watch that last week. Yeah. It's really good.
What is wrong with my camera on my iPad? It's foggy in my room.
I don't know. Pete.
The fog settled in.
Pete in the car. What is it, Pete? What's the movie?
There's only one answer to this question. It's Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, it's a comedy. Ooh. That's better than the original.
Correct.
Okay.
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah. All right. That's the one with Bridget Nielsen is in it, correct?
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Oh, we're missing it completely. The greatest sequel ever was Rocky 2. Rocky 2 was almost better than Rocky 1. Rocky 2 may be my favorite Rocky movie.
Rocky 2 is really good.
Rocky 2 is badass, man. It started getting weird when you bring Clubber Lang in and the big Russian and living in America.
But again, not a comedy.
Doesn't matter. When Rocky talked, you laughed. Like, you know, I was trying to, hey, me and you, and, you know, maybe I could name the Turtles Cuff and Link or something. You know, like, who didn't laugh? Well, hey, Buckus, come here, Buckus. You know. Hey, Paulie, why don't you shut up? I'll punch you in the face. You know?
Well, I think those are probably all lines from the first one or close to it.
We all could change. You change.
That's four.
Rocky IV is better.
But not comedies.
Yeah.
You know when Rocky got weird? Which one was the robot? Like, that's done with that.
That's four.
Yeah. And the kid. Rocky's kid was a punk.
Oh, that's in...
Get the kid a haircut.
Well, the kid in 5.
That was 5, yeah.
Spoiled brat.
You can't. I mean, I defy you to go back and watch that one again. How about a sports call, just for fun? Brandon in Boston. What do you got, Brandon? On Cam Newton.
Yeah, on Cam Newton. But real quick, you guys are forgetting about Ted 2. How about that?
Ted 2! Outstanding, Brandon! Outstanding! Good job, buddy.
Ted Clubberlang. When they asked him a name in court, Ted Clubberlang.
When was the one when he did the lady who worked at the supermarket and Ted
that's
went to the
That's the first one. That's
that was the first one?
That was
Flash
the first
Gordon.
One.
Flash Gordon was the first one too, right?
Was incredible too, and then they just killed Ted too, so what a duo right there.
That's a good one. Yep. Good call.
But on Cam Newton, I think a lot of people are, you know, they're being overshadowed by the fact that this guy's been battling injuries for 2 to 3 years now, and after last season and sitting out the entire season, I think we have a lot to be excited for, especially if he comes in healthy, having all this time to recover and rehab. Outside of his injury years, you know, Cam Newton can be a top 10 quarterback, if not top 5, and I think the sky's the limit, bringing him in here with a great guy and Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, and you mix that with his motivation and his dedication and his competitiveness, that I think we're going to see a riled up Cam Newton, you know, if the season goes according to
plan. I
hope so too.
I hope so. And I think that's the best thing that Bill does when he brings in guys from other teams or veterans late in their career and you're looking for that revival is wipes that slate clean and the locker room environment that accepts that person in. That's the two best things Cam's got going for him. Clean slate, great locker room environment. Now go play.
So what do you make
that's up to the player then?
What do you make of the reports? McCone has had it today. We've seen some of it on Twitter about Antonio Brown. Waiting to hear from the league what their decisions are going to be. And Tim, I don't know if you have anything like more up to date on that, but you know, the presumed
talent
interest
supersedes everything in that league, baby.
Glazer says that there's going to be real interest in him this year. So, and like you said, Zoe, I mean, what do you have? 3 days with Brady, and he was unbelievable in that Dolphins game.
He's the best. He's the best in the league when his head's right. He's the best receiver I've ever seen during my last 20 years of football. He's that dynamic. He's a game breaker.
I still
he
question
insane.
Whether
he's nuts.
Yeah, does he want to play?
all of a sudden he acquired mental stability within the last 4 months, right? Now
I don't know.
Things right?
I don't know if he wants to play. He didn't want to play in Pittsburgh. He didn't want to play for Oakland. And it appears now quite painfully, obviously, he didn't want to play for the Patriots. If he did, he would have stopped all the other stuff. All right, Kurt Warner.
He did want to play for the Patriots.
You think he did?
Go ahead. Yeah. He gets so caught up in all that other crap off the field.
Yeah, he just didn't act that way. That's what I'm saying. If he really wanted to, he wouldn't have done that other stuff. All right, Kurt Warner going to be joining us next. He had some interesting comparisons that he drew to his own career,
sure,
to Cam Newton's career. So he'll be joining us next here on Zolak and Bertrand. Hardy in for Beatle.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
They're the office gossips of Boston sports.
It doesn't matter about games and outcomes and scores. He got fingered.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back, Zolak and Bertrand. Hardy in for Mark Bertrand. Kurt Warner on the phone right now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, NFL Network Analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Kurt13Warner. See if that button works. Kurt, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for being on the show.
You got it. How you guys doing?
Excellent.
We're doing really good here, Kurt. I appreciate the time. You had the comments regarding Cam Newton coming here and sort of compared, you know, his arc, his track to your end of your career. A lot of people forget you went to the Giants prior to going to Arizona. My question to you is the amount of offense, and I think, you know, when you play the quarterback position, the transfer of terminology and what you're comfortable running, how much what you ran with the Rams did the Giants allow you to use, and then eventually when you went to Arizona had all that success with those guys? How much did you take with you?
Yeah, there was very little carryover in terms of how we played the game from the Rams to the Giants, and that was probably the biggest challenge, because just like Cam, you know, signing a 1-year deal or signing a short-term deal, the goal is really, you know, and again, Cam's is a little bit different, but my goal when I went to New York, knowing that they had drafted Eli, was simply just to try to play 1 year and prove to someone else in the league that I could be the starting quarterback and a franchise guy again. And so what was hard for me was I didn't get to play the game the way I had always played the game. And so automatically people are going to make comparisons to what you were when you were an MVP and playing with the greatest show on turf to what we did in New York. And it wasn't even a semblance of the same kind of offense. And I was asked to do completely different things there. And so that was the hard thing for me was, you know, really being able to show people that I could play at a similar level that I did earlier in my career, but having to do it, you know, in a different way. And, you know, so there was a lot of things that were going on there. You know, there was a number of guys with Coach Coughlin and Huffnagel and Gilbride. They were all there kind of wanting to bring their offense. So we really didn't have an identity. And so that was the difficult part. I guess the good thing for Cam is that, you know, the Patriots aren't solidified at the quarterback position. You look around the league and you started to look around and say, okay, where could Cam go where he has a legit chance to, you know, to compete to start? And then I think that the next thing is, you know, for me, I had to go to the Giants for a year and knew I was going somewhere else. For Cam, he's got an opportunity if he can prove to them that he is the guy and similar to the guy that we've seen throughout his career, to step in and take over another franchise and not have to go somewhere else, you know, and parlay this 1 year into another opportunity to prove himself somewhere else. So I think that's the exciting part. You know, the questions you have is what's the offense going to look like? I mean, I love what Josh McDaniels does and how creative he is and the way that he evolves offensively, although they've never necessarily been what Cam is. So you have to believe they can do it. How much do they want to do it, especially with, you know, other pieces in place, and how does that work? And then the second part is who is Cam Newton? You know, who is he now, and who is he going to be for the rest of his career? Can he be the MVP Cam Newton from the standpoint of, you know, run as much and put his body in harm's way and take that pounding moving forward? Or does he have to change and become more of a stationary drop-back quarterback with the other part just being an element of that? You know, what's he going to look like? How long can he continue to play like he did early in his career, especially with the injury? So I think there's a lot of questions to be answered. But all things said, I think it's a great fit and a great situation for Cam, you know, to, you know, kickstart his career again and possibly even, you know, become the franchise or starting guy for the Patriots, you know, for a good chunk of his career if he can prove that he's that same guy.
Kurt, you wrote on NFL.com about your last season with the Rams and your injuries and how you were sidelined with the hand injury on the throwing hand. And you talk a lot about your confidence and how your confidence in your skills never wavered after the rough season. Isn't there like some degree of like getting back though after you recover from the injury? And can we expect the same thing from Cam Newton? You know, your body has been injured. It has to change a little bit in terms of your confidence while you're undergoing the injury. How long does it take to get that confidence back? And once you do have it back, is it different in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is twofold. You know, I think you not only have to prove to the league that their perception of you is wrong, but you do have to prove it to yourself. You know, there comes a time when you're not having the same success that you did, you know, earlier. You could put Cam Newton in that same category his last couple years to what happened with me in St. Louis, where, you know, you start to wonder, okay, why? Why am I not having the same success? And you really have to scrutinize and self-scout yourself and figure out what are the reasons. And, you know, just one example for me was, you know, I heard all the rumors about my hand and the injuries and maybe my hand wasn't as strong as it used to be and some of those things. And, you know, there was one side of it that I'm out on the field and I'm playing and I'm throwing the football and I'm thinking, okay, it doesn't seem to have any effect on me. I feel like I'm just as accurate and can throw the ball just as well. But the other side of it said, okay, but what if there is some truth to this? And that was really the reason that I went to the gloves late in my career, was I didn't know if there was any truth to those rumors about my hand injury. Huh. But I thought, what if there is, what could I possibly do to maybe help that and give me a little more grip in the pocket? So I went to the gloves. To this day, I have no idea if it helped me or it didn't, if that was really an issue or it wasn't. But I found a way to kind of rectify that and feel comfortable again and say to myself, hey, if, you know, I got to take this and I got to challenge this and test this. And if there is some truth to it, I've got to, you know, make sure I address it. And so I think some of those things come into play. You know, again, with Cam is, I think not only is he coming off the injuries and, you know, not having been successful the last couple years, but he's also getting older. And so I think he's going to have to answer some of those questions from a physicality part of it. Can I be the same guy that I was early in my career? Can I put myself at risk and can I bounce back from some of those hits and some of the ways that I played the game? Or do I have to evolve in some way and play a little bit differently? And so, yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think you all have to do that as we get older. But, you know, for a guy like Cam, who's such a different specimen and has played the position so differently than most people, I think that's going to be an assessment he has to make, you know, for the next decade of his career if he plays that long, figuring out who he can be and how he can continue to play at a high level at the position, even if it doesn't look the same as it did early in his career.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're a former two-time MVP. Cam was an MVP at one time. And when you reach that status, you play as long as you guys have. It's tough to change when you go to something new. But the one thing about Bill and covering Bill and calling the games for these guys is his ability to adapt. But their attention to detail and accuracy. Like, you were an accurate thrower. You could throw the ball in holes. The thing that scares me with Cam is Cam's a big play guy. He'll throw it off the back foot. You know what I'm saying? He'll wait on it, and he'll like to drive the ball in cuts or throw it deep. Is can they get him to where it's rhythmic passing, where it's five steps, bang, it balls out? And I think that would help protect him health-wise if they could. I just hope he's not resistant to change a little bit.
Yeah, and sometimes I don't know if it's necessarily resistant to change. I mean, from what I've heard about Cam, and, you know, when North Turner was there and they did a lot more of that sort of passing game. Yeah. But, you know, even if you're not resistant to it, sometimes it's not your forte. You know, the ability to read and decipher and get the ball out quick and have a quick release and those kinds of things, that's not Cam's game. And so as much as you would love to see that and see guys evolve to, as you said, you know, for different reasons, to play within a particular offense, to protect yourself, to not have to rely on the big play, you know, a lot of those things, especially, you know, in New England where they're a team – you know, even with Tom, when they could score a lot of points, they were still more of a small ball, dink and dunk. Hey, let's just get first downs. We've got a good defense, and we'll methodically, you know, do this thing as opposed to a bunch of big plays, you know, on top of things. So it's going to be interesting. And I just don't know if, you know, again, not resistant, but I don't know if that's just Cam's strength. And if he can play that way week in and week out and have the same kind of success as some more maybe pure passers, you know, but maybe that's just because that's been what he is and that's all we've seen. So you hope that he has that in his repertoire, but there's just some guys that are more big play type guys that struggle when you ask them to be, you know, to play a more efficient game and play for first downs as opposed to big plays.
See, Roethlisberger's like that too. Like I would compare him to Ben, where Ben would extend plays and he liked to force the ball downfield. Now he had great wideouts. Were you surprised that there wasn't much of a market for Cam to this point over the last 3 months, given the fact he is healthy?
I'll say yes and no. I mean, I'll say no from the standpoint that, you know, the first thing that I do as we get into free agency is I, you know, kind of scope the league and go, okay, you know, where are the opportunities? Where, you know, for a veteran guy that's proven that he can play, you know, where's a good fit for him? And when you look around the league, our league is really in great shape in terms of, you know, quarterbacks that, you know, teams have committed to, guys that you assume to be starters, not only now, but, you know, teams committed for the long term. And so there's just not a lot of spots out there, especially after the draft. There's not a lot of spots out there that you go, gosh, you know, where does Cam fit in? You know, when I was looking through it, I mean, I thought the Patriots were the best spot just because we don't know a lot about Jared and what he can be as a quarterback, and he hasn't really proven himself. A couple other places that I looked at, I thought Jacksonville would be a great spot for him with Fournette and, you know, Garner, who is a guy that, you know, played well at times last year, but obviously they put him in and then they pulled him back out, so they're not fully convinced he's that guy. So I thought he might be a better fit, you know, in Jacksonville than some other places. And I thought Washington was another opportunity with Ron Rivera there and, you know, Dwayne Haskins, who's a young guy who hasn't proven himself. But again, you know, those two teams are two other teams that could go the other route like they did, saying, hey, we're committed to our young guys. We believe they can be that guy. And so you take those two teams out of the equation and go, where else is there? Where else around the league, you know, are there teams that don't have, you know, that guy? Or a young guy that they're committed to, even if Cam may be a better quarterback right at this moment, you're not going to bring in and kind of shake the apple cart, you know, with the young guys that you have. And so those were kind of the situations. You mentioned Big Ben. That was kind of another thing that you go, okay, is there a guy that's later in his career, like a Ben who's, I think, got 2 years left on his contract, where maybe you say, hey, we bring Cam in to be the next guy, you know, after Ben, or if Ben gets hurt because he's coming off the shoulder injury, but it's not a situation where he's coming in to compete to start. So there just isn't a lot of places in the league right now that I think, you know, are open canvases in terms of what they're going to do at the quarterback position. So he kind of fell into a market where it was like, there's just not a lot of need out there. And I think that's what we saw and lent itself to probably the contract that he signed and all of that. But I think at the end of the day, when I looked at the scope of things, I thought New England would be the best fit for him. I think he got to the right place, and I think he's going to have a great opportunity to compete and get back on track with his career if he's healthy and can play at that level.
Last question for me, Kurt. You know, you mentioned the contract that he signed. I know you had to take a significant cut when you went from the Rams to the Giants, and still it was another, you know, deal or two with the Cardinals before you made it back to, you know, something approaching the level you had been at. Did you feel humbled by that in terms of an economic standpoint, and did that work to your advantage in any way, and do you think it could work to Cam's advantage too?
I think you're always humbled. There's always a nice thing about, you know, getting to that point where you feel like you've made it, you know, in an MVP or Super Bowl or whatever that is, where you've made it and you've kind of earned that. So I think it's always humbling, when something happens and that changes and you find yourself in a situation where you're fighting again. But what I've always said is the DNA of great players and great competitors, and you could probably argue every player in the NFL, the DNA is competition, is just give me a shot to prove myself, and you know, I'll take it and I'll run with it, and may the best man win. And so sometimes you get away from that when you get into that comfortable spot, and when you get back into that mode, you feel at home again. And again, it's not a knock when you've made it, because you still compete, but there's just something to that raw competition of, hey, it's anybody's job, go earn it, that, you know, we've all, you know, really grown up with that mentality. And I think that mentality can be a good thing, you know, to kind of refocus you and connect you and, you know, reignite that drive that's inside of you. And so, and I think the other thing is, again, I keep saying you got to have a realistic perspective of everything. Is that, you know, as humbling as it is to go from, you know, two MVPs to playing, you know, for whatever contract I played for, as humbling as that is, I understood it. You know, I understood why, you know, if an organization that you went to two Super Bowls with decides to cut you, you know, the first perception is, okay, what's wrong with you? You know, like, why would they cut this guy if you know, something wasn't wrong? And so I understood the perception, and I understood that there wasn't a lot of opportunities, very similar to Cam, where it wasn't like five people were asking me to come play for them, where I could go, okay, well, let's see who paid me the most money and who's got the best situation. When, you know, the supply and demand is low, you kind of have to take the opportunity there, and you bet on yourself, which Cam is doing, and you go out and compete.
Kurt, we appreciate it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.